The following segment is a paid commercial program by Christensen CPAs and Consultants. It's time for Ask the Expert on News Talk 1340 and 96.3 FM, KWLM.
And we have experts in our studio today with Christensen's. And first up, Joel Gratz, CPA and managing partner. Joel, good to see you.
Hey, again. Good morning, Bill. How are things today?
Excellent. I was just saying, it's still a little chilly as you were rubbing your hands.
I was rubbing my hands together time.
I've been rubbing mine as well. And it's just weird, you know. And then, of course, it varies. When the heat is on, it feels great, but all of a sudden the sensors pick up, oh, it's too warm in that room, and then the air conditioning kicks on. So,
good HVAC system here, it sounds like.
Anyway, Joel, you brought another member of your team in today, and I believe you said your newest partner, right?
Yes, yeah, we're very pleased, the partners, to announce Teresa Carlson, who is with us in studio, who's been with us for how many years, Teresa?
17.
17 years. She does most of her time in Litchfield, but she does travel to Wilmer also. So she runs the office in Litchfield, and she is, yes, our newest partner. Congratulations, Teresa. She's our sixth partner, so we're very proud of that as well. And we're talking on a topic that Teresa, two and a half years ago during the COVID stretch, was our expert. And she lived and breathed this stuff. Not that there's probably some rust on this topic, but we're talking about employee retention credits, and there's a lot of news, not maybe it's not news, but like social media and a lot of consultants and emails. And I had a client this morning say, tell me more about this 22 ERC program, employee retention credit. I'm like, there really isn't one. But so Teresa's our expert on that. So that really was the topic we wanted to talk about today. And again, congratulations, Teresa, on the partnership.
Yep. Thank you. It's been, you know, 17 years is a long time, and I was actually a client and worked with a prior partner, Marty Neeland, and I was looking for a change, and she's like, why don't you come work for us? And here I am 17 years later, and I guess at the time when I first came, I didn't think I was ever going to have the aspiration to be a partner, but just over the course of those years, I, you know, thought, wanted to be have a seat at the table, and here I am. So very excited.
She's grown with the firm. She's basically done probably everything in the firm, but now she focuses on, you know, a lot of payroll aspects and business taxation and accounting, bookkeeping. So I should stop saying all the things she does because she'll feel tired. But so she's done a lot of great things for us, and we're just pleased as punch to have her in the team.
Yeah. So let's talk about this, because I've been hearing ads on some of the network programming we have on the air, you know, about employers taking this credit. And now if you've already received a credit, I mean, that's what seems, I think it's, they make it sound as if, well, that doesn't matter. You're still eligible. So can you kind of clarify it?
It depends on what type of credit they received or what quarter they received, you know, that credit in. And you might be able to, but you have to be very careful as far as what wages you are considering, because if you use them for what we called COVID credits, which was where if the FFCRA, where if you had an employee that was out sick, you had to give them so much time. So if you've used those credits, you can't use those wages then to now get the ERC. And you can go back and get the ERC for 2020 and 2021. There is no new program. I know a lot of people are getting solicitations right now. And actually in the public accounting industry, we actually call them ERC mills, basically.
Okay.
No, it's
because
true.
They're advertising that you're going to get these credits, and they're stretching the truth, or they're putting you at risk potentially because they're saying you're going to qualify for something when technically you don't qualify for it.
What's the motivation then behind this? Are you paying these companies something then to get this credit? I'm assuming there has to be some reason they'd be spending this money to promote it.
Yep, they're going to come in and probably have a upfront charge, you know, to either A, look at your information and tell you, you know, sorry, you don't qualify, but you've already paid them, or they're going to get a, you know, a portion of the credit potentially too that they're going to take as their fee. So
it's about the money, Bill, right? that's always what it is. And I'm not calling these folks bottom feeders because they're probably legit people knowing what they're doing. It's how they're selling it. And like Teresa said, some of the promises that are made and the requirements, you know, generally it's going to be that reduction in gross receipts, right, Teresa?
Correct. So there's differences between 2020 and 2021 of what you could take for the credit. And so in 2020, it was you had to have a 50% reduction in gross receipts from 2020 quarter to 2019, whereas in 2021, it was you had to have just a 20% reduction in gross receipts when you compared 21's quarter to 2019.
I see. So is it based on each individual employee then that would be eligible? You can get this credit for each employee you retain during
It's the employer, so it's by the business.
Right, yeah.
Right, so the wages of the employee is what generates it. It's kind of a payroll tax credit, right?
Correct.
Essentially, that gets converted to cash. Mm-hmm. So again, it's back to the money bill. And you know, again, timing-wise, it was really hot and heavy, obviously, during the 2021, the COVID stuff, all that was legit. And, you know, we all know how many programs there were out there and how complicated, as Teresa already mentioned, they were. So then you let it settle for a while on a low burn rate, you know, and then when you're thinking about selling it again, people kind of forget about that. And they're like, hey, did you guys get that employee retention credit?
Right.
We all like...
Oh, let's
I think
see.
I talked to my client about that, you know, and that's honestly, I mean, I guess give them kudos for that marketing strategy, right, to make that and make people think they didn't get it. And most people, you know, did have a reduction during COVID, and a lot of folks did qualify, and a lot of folks have gotten this credit. Some haven't been funded yet. That's another issue that's out there because there was just so much abuse, Bill, as you could probably imagine. With numbers, with did you really have a decline in gross receipts? Were you required to shut down? Were you in an industry that was required to shut down? Or there's this ambiguous term, and I should have wrote it down, but substantial, what's the word again, Teresa, help me out, the substantial reduction in your operations due to COVID.
Right.
Well, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where, I'm not trying to assume what I know from these marketing people and what these companies are doing, but I think that's what they're using, saying, well, if you thought you didn't, we're realizing that maybe there's an opportunity in this substantial, whatever that means, loss, which allows them to go back. Like Teresa said, you can go back and amend and get this stuff. Now, Teresa, what's the window on that? Is it 3 years?
It's 3 years from the date that you originally filed the 941, which is where they would take the credit on. So you would have to do an amended 941, and you have 3 years. So for Q2 of 2020, they need to be in by July of 2023 mm-hmm. to be able to get that credit.
So you see the timing window now? So it's another reason why they're like, hey, if you didn't, your time is running out. And everybody panics, like, oh my gosh, my opportunity is running by. I better do this now. And I think that's what they're capitalizing on too. And again, I'm not trying to rip on anybody who's doing that and kind of looking and trying to find that opportunity, because I'm sure there is people who didn't do it, who may qualify, who maybe didn't go through the hoops, as Teresa already mentioned, in the math and the calculations to do that. So you've got time to go back, but that time for that first set is running out.
And you may have qualified, but if you also qualified for, like I said, the FFCRA credits or for a PPP loan, mm-hmm. and you use those wages to then get your loan, your PPP loan forgiven, or to get this other credit, you can't use those wages. So you can't double dip, if mm-hmm. you will. So they're trying to catch people on that, oh, I didn't get the ERC, so I still qualify. But technically they don't, because I already used those wages in a different way.
Yeah, that's a good point, right?
Right. No, it's an excellent point, and that's what I think they're trying to capture. And what we're seeing and hearing, again, that back to that abuse and the audits that's going to be happening or are happening, I don't know of anybody in our office who's been denied a request at this point. Do you, Teresa?
Nope.
I guess no one has said anything. But there's some really large claims out there, and we're hearing that they're looking at everybody who's going to use that factor of that substantial loss definition. Like, if you can't substantiate, you know, because of course when you send it in, you just attest that you did, right? You don't actually send in your work papers. So, you know, during that time of craziness and COVID, everybody's just doing it and like, no, they'll never audit this because they don't have time to do it, and it's COVID, and no one's ever going to push the COVID card and say, bring your money back. So I think people were gambling a little bit, in my opinion, and I know we're going back to an era where the world was sideways. So, I mean, that, you know, we all were in a crazy state of mind at the time, but... So I think they're pushing the envelope, and I think there's going to be audits, and there could be people paying it back if they got it, or if they think they're getting it, they may not get it. So I don't think this is a no-brainer, and you really got to have your ducks in a row, right, in all the documentation, which we as CPAs take pride in, and obviously in our code of ethics and all the things we do, we got to play by the rules. We like to live in the gray, but we got to play by the rules, right? So some of these consulting firms don't have the same requirements, ethics requirements that a CPA firm does. And we did a lot of them, you know, and I know there's other consultant peoples who did some, not that they were wrong, but they have different rules, you know. So we take pride in making sure that, you know, when we say you qualify, there should be no question we'll defend you to the end. So that's kind of how that works for us in the CPA firm.
Yeah, and I'm probably one that likes more documentation. So when I was doing this for, you know, different members of the firm and kind of reviewing it, I'd be like, nope, I need to have this. I need to have this. And they're like, do you really need that? And I'm like, oh, no, we need to make sure we have this and we have it for our clients so we can always go back to it. And because the rules and regulations say that you have to keep all this information for up 4 years from the date that you filed the amendment or the 941, because you can be audited in that window. So you have to keep it for that long.
Now, I was going to ask you that because now what about just general, you know, taxes? Is it still 7 years kind of, or what is the rule?
Well, the general rule of thumb is there's always 3 years open. So at a minimum, you have to keep three. But if they find something goofy, which is, again, when I say goofy, that's not really an IRS term, but anything unusual, they could open you up to seven. If they see a trend, so they, you know, the government allows you to go back farther if they feel there's abuse, you know, or stuff like that. So seven is what we usually recommend, Bill, for our clients to keep their records.
And otherwise, do you keep all of that now you're as a firm then too? Is that part of your service that you provide? Keeping all that stuff.
Yep, that is correct. Yep. So we have all the documentation. So then that way, if the client were to receive a letter, we have we can easily access that documentation. So
or their records are in the basement and they get full of water, or you know, which we've had on occasion where we have, you know, haven't had everything, but we try to get as much as we can to support it and do that route. So yes, it's part of our service, part of our gazillion trillion megabytes, and I'm not saying this right, AJ, sorry if you're listening, our IT guy, but we've got piles of, you know, of storage in that regard, not the whole paper anymore like we used to when I was a young man. When my first job at my first CPA firm, I was a runner, and I moved files and I stored them and I did all that stuff. So that's what that young farm boy did in college to pay the bills and buy beer, was to haul boxes around and do all that stuff.
That kept you in shape though, I bet.
Oh, it did. It did. It's like throwing bales, right, Bill? Teresa? Yeah, I mean, that's how that works, you know.
Or rock picking. Yep.
Or rock picking. Yeah. Most expensive rock picker in Kennewick County right here. But anyway.
Now, did you want to, should we retire this topic and move on to, you mentioned about 1099s here,
sure,
too,
Bill.
A little bit.
Well, I want to say one more thing, too. Okay. I said if you are going to amend your 941s to, you know, or you have already done that, be aware that it's probably taking 8 to 10 months, if not longer, especially on an amended return, to even hear from the IRS about, you may not even get your funds in that time frame, but you might just get a letter saying, hey, we're still looking into it, but maybe not even that. So it is taking the IRS a long time to get through these amended returns to give that refund back, because I anticipate they're looking at them a lot closer now since it is out of that COVID window. So it's been taking quite a while.
The larger the refund or credit, the greater aptitude you're going to get a holdup and or an audit. So if you're getting a $30,000 credit, which is still a lot of money to a lot of folks, you probably aren't going to get questioned on that, if I could be honest, but I don't know that. But if you're in the hundreds of thousands, you don't expect that very soon, like Teresa said. It'll be months before you ever see it. Not that you won't get it. It's just going to take you a few months. So don't count on the cash coming awfully soon.
Yeah, so don't take that next vacation based on this.
Correct.
They like to advertise that, too. You know, you're getting a tax refund. You know, why not?
Book your vacation now. Yeah. No, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, what about these businesses now in the 1099s? Is this the, you know, that's something that, is that, there's more and more people receiving those, aren't there? Kind of, isn't that been the trend? Maybe,
correct,
you know, more part-time work and things like that.
Or more gig work, if you will.
Right.
So they're doing a lot of this on the side, and they don't have a, you know, they're just themselves doing the, you know, doing it. And in that situation, a business needs to, like, if someone's moving your snow and you know, it's just, you know, my son, Zach Carlson, out there moving snow, he's going to have to get a 1099 for doing that. And it's just, I believe it was a coworker of mine. I'm trying to remember exactly the tagline, but, you know, it takes less time to set up than it does to clean up.
Michelle Larson,
I think,
tagged
that. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So then, you know, we're just coming off of our 1099 and payroll season. So when Joel's talked about being tired, it's like, it's been a rough month getting all that out. But if you actually take the time ahead of time, and as you're paying those people, request the form W-9 from them to get their ID numbers, to get their addresses. You have all that information then throughout the year, so you don't have to scramble in January trying to track people down to get that information so that you can properly report.
Yes, the deadline was just yesterday, technically, for all the 1099 miscellaneous, NECs, PATRs, there's a INTs.
Yep.
Wow. There's a lot of that, and we do a lot of after-the-fact stuff, and as a business owner, you're required to do that stuff if it's over the $600 threshold.
I was going to ask you if there still is a threshold.
Right, and it's all relating to the IRS is still seeing a lot of abuse out there where things are not recorded, and we are seeing that that is not going to go away. It's actually going to get worse, and you probably have heard on the radio and news stories the whole Venmo thing where, you know, these 1099s are going to be issued for anything on Venmo, and you have to reconcile that. It's not going to happen on the 22, but 23, right? That's what they're thinking,
that's
right,
what they're
Teresa?
Pushing.
And is it a miscellaneous or is it a special Venmo, special thing?
I anticipate it will be an NEC, not employee compensation.
It's an NEC 1099. So if you're, you know, like my wife and my kids are transferring money back and forth all the time, and shame on you, Patty Gratz, out there for funding my children without me knowing it, because I'm not on Venmo. It scares the poopy out of me, I'll be honest. But it's probably a good exchange. But if you start seeing this, they're just going to capture all that volume, whether it's personal or business. And my sons could get a 1099 NEC from my, you know, from Venmo saying you received thousands of dollars from Patty Gratz this year, and she, is that business or not? So you're going to have to reconcile that. So that's something that's freaking a lot of people out, you know, because Venmo and that whole transactional way of moving cash versus writing checks or actually the bills themselves, you know, that's a big deal. So it's a big business, and the IRS is thinking people are using that to, you know, get it out of the system, and now they don't have to report it. And some people do think that. Yeah, if I could be honest with you, like, well, after I got Venmo, that really doesn't count, right? I think it does count. So I don't think, I know it counts. So, I mean, it's that's something that's going to be growing. And government's getting bigger. Government's watching more we do, you know, and it's not because the CPAs out there are saying we want more work either, I'll be honest with you. So that's where we see the trend going. Whether it's right or wrong, good or bad, you know, we're not the ones, and don't kill the messenger. But that is, there's more coming down the pike, I think, especially knowing the current state of legislative efforts, you know, both nationally and at the state level. They're just going to keep asking for more stuff, I can be honest.
Yeah, and that might be why they're trying to hire more people too, right, in the IRS, just to have more eyes, I guess, on all this, what's going on.
Well, it's... You know, they say if you spend $85 billion, you should be able to get $85 billion back. Well, that's a wash. So is it really the right thing to do? But, I mean, to make sure people are doing their jobs, unfortunately, in this country, some people's got to be watching. And you have to know that somebody's watching. And in the last 10 years, not that there's been more abuse, but they know that the IRS is behind. Just like we at our jobs, you know, can't have enough people to do all the work. It's the same with the IRS. And we're honestly glad that they're hiring more people. I'm sure, Teresa, you've had a lot of times you're trying to help a client answer a letter they get, and it takes 8 to 12 to 24 months to solve a problem. And it's like, that shouldn't be in our country, right? I mean, they're working for us. They want us, and we complied. We did all the things we had to do. And yet it takes you to get back to us 24 months. And frankly, I might have forgotten about it. You know, so it's like, man, so we're actually okay, I think, as a firm, Teresa, on what your thoughts are. I think it's okay to have a few more IRS people out there to help us do that. And it's going to take them years to train those folks up. So I'm not overly worried about it. And frankly, I don't take positions and play audit roulette on my taxes. I'm sure Teresa doesn't either. So in many practitioners, especially in Minnesota, you know, the honest, you know, good old-fashioned state, we don't do that here for the most part. So, I mean, I'm not really worried about it. My clients shouldn't be worried about it. And hopefully this means a better response time when we get stuff cleared up faster.
Mm-hmm. Right, I would agree. Just being able to call the IRS, I mean, lots of times, even I think on our, you know, there's a practitioner, you know, hotline that you get priority, but you call in and it's like, sorry, you know, there's no agents available, and they actually, you're not even put on hold, they just cut you off because there's too many people in front of you, so it's hard to get, you're sending letters instead of phone call, you could get it done much quicker. And, you know, here we are. So,
yeah. What about emails? Do they respond to those at all or not really?
They do not transact via email. So if you get back to the scam stuff, you get an email that says my IRS agent, you know, number, badge number, whatever, send money. That's not good. That's really not how it happens. There has to be a conversation and a letter that's usually coordinated with that. So be very careful. You know, the folks on the elderly side or the older side, when you get something from an IRS person, you get really nervous, you know, and I get it. So you want to take care of it. And if it's only $500, well, I'm not going to call Joel because, man, it might cost me money to fix this. So they just send the money, you know. So the world's a funny place with all the scammers, right, which is why we have all this data privacy and security and all the things we got to do and the multi-factor authentication and all these things. So it's unfortunate that there's people who make a living all day long scamming people. And that just, I hate that. You know, I hate that. So, I mean, I wish it didn't happen, but it does. And another reason why IRS is sending out more paperwork, why the IRS has got more agents coming, and this is how it works. All because somebody broke the rules, you know. Sorry, that was me on my preacher box. Sorry about that. I got a little tangent. It wasn't political this time. It was just a preacher box. But
all right. Well, anything else? We got about one more minute before we wrap up here.
The big takeaway is there is not, I repeat, not a new 2022 ERC program. So, I mean, there's nothing new here. It's the same program. It's just about doing a look back. And if you haven't done it, absolutely, you should do it. You can still get it. I mean, we're doing a few of those. But most people got that done and probably got it done right the first time is what we're thinking.
Mm-hmm. Well, because as we were working on them for their taxes or, you know, their accounting, we were checking that information right away. So trying to think ahead and do it right away instead of an amended return. So
if you have any questions, call Teresa Carlson, not Joel Gratz. So she's our expert in her office. How would we get a hold of you, Teresa?
You can either call the Wilmer number, which is 320-235-5937, or you could call the Litchfield office, which is 320-373-1040.
Ah,
1040.
Yeah. You must have requested that number maybe a few years ago already.
Well, that came with the acquisition with Mark Nicholson, so he must have requested it. I'm not sure, but it's kind of fun.
It's a good number,
Good number.
All right, guys, great to see you. Have a good day, and thanks for coming in and filling us in.
Thanks, Bill.
Thanks very much.